Welcome to the College Knowledge Podcast, sponsored by the College Planning Network and Paradigm Financial Group. Whether you're searching for that right fit college, applying to college, or figuring out how you're going to afford it all, you're in the right place. You'll hear from deans, admissions counselors, student athletes, and scholars from esteemed universities and colleges around the country. We'll dig deep to uncover their insight and unique experiences. So whether you're a student gearing up for college or a parent with college-bound kids, sit back, relax, and listen. Like you, we have lots of questions. Our guests have the answers, and we're excited to share them with you. Let's get started.
Welcome back to College Knowledge. I'm Dave Kozak, your co-host, alongside Mr. Joe Kearns, Joe the College Pro.
Dave the CEO, it's always good to be sitting next to you. Always enjoy our conversations, especially when we have great guests like today.
I'm particularly excited about today. The amount of knowledge that our guest has is extensive. Years in the industry of higher education, insight is going to be remarkable. I want to pick the brain. I want to know what he knows and go from there. Without further ado, I'll introduce the guest today. We are interviewing Dr. Robert Zemsky. He's the chair of the Learning Alliance for Higher Education. He has been at the University of Pennsylvania for many years. We have a common thread. I graduated from Franklin & Marshall, and he was instrumental in guiding Franklin & Marshall through its growth and expansion in the 90s and early 2000s. So Dr. Zemsky, welcome to the show. We really appreciate having you.
My pleasure.
So you sent me a really cool email this morning saying, how about we start the show with some of my morning reading? And I couldn't agree more. Before you jump into that, just give insight on your background and what you specialize in and how you've gotten to be where you are.
Well, let me start with the obvious. I'm an old man, so you got enough. Let's not make any funny about that. I am the classic California kid. I came out of Berkeley High School in the 1950s. I trooped down the coast to Whittier College, good liberal arts college, spent 4 years there, but a year and a half of it was actually in Europe because Whittier had an exchange program with Denmark. I actually ended up getting married in Denmark, but not to a Dane, but to an American. And she and I have been together 65 years since. I came back. I graduated from Whittier. And this is in the good old days when you went to graduate school because your mentor told you where to go. So my mentor told me where to go was Yale. He got me into Yale. I was an Ed Morgan student at Yale and did colonial history. But along the way, I had a series of friends who were really sociologists who were interested in models. And this is a long time ago, but we were just beginning to build simple statistical models. And that's what my work on my dissertation was. And that got a lot of publication. I got tenure. And then I became, in a very odd way, Penn's chief planning officer.
Okay.
And that meant that since then, I haven't really been inside a department. I actually moved from arts and sciences to the Graduate School of Education, was there. Actually, since you mentioned the Franklin Marshall, our connection is even better. I probably was on the board when you were at Franklin Marshall.
100% were.
And my kids are all in the business. My son was a number two for a long time at INSEAD in France, and he now outshines his father, which is nice. You want your children to outshine you. But what has really happened is, as I reach the end, I've learned to talk about the end without crying. As I've reached the end, I realize my path has been glorious. I have no complaints about my career, but Lord, the industry is simply not what it was or what it should be. I am in a position to make a difference in that. About 3 years ago, I and a colleague who's the chancellor of the University of Minnesota, Rochester, started something called College in Three. We think it was time to persuade all of higher ed you could have a college degree in three. It would solve a number of problems. We've been sort of wildly successful. We've got some 80 institutions now in our network, growing to 100. We think we'll be at 200 in a year from now. But for purposes of this conversation, what that experience has taught me is that we've been dealing with individual colleges really struggling with this larger macro problems that I want to talk about. Have some insight about what really happens at the ground level, as well as what theoretically my studies tell me should happen. So if that'll do, that's who I am.
Love it. Fantastic. Wisdom beyond is coming. So in that email this morning you sent me, your daily reading, you were talking about something and the subject matter was, I interpreted it as a lack of trust in the higher education system.
Oh, it wasn't that, but that's a place to start. So the story goes, which is a true story. Every morning I get up at about 6:30 and I start on my computer and I do a read of the Inside Higher Ed, et cetera, et cetera. And I've been doing this for years, probably at least five. But what I've realized over the last year is that it's an exercise that is increasingly depressing. The news is so bad. It's bad in its atmospherics. It's dispiriting, depressing, lamenting. And I would then, at the end of each of these, I would lay all of that on one side. And on the other, I'd say, what do you really know, Bob? And I said to myself, not worried about that kind of thing you're not supposed to say, but I did, and I'm saying it to you. The trouble with all of this, they don't know what they're talking about. We are in real trouble, but it's not all the political atmospherists. It's not DEI. It's not Trumpism. Those all hurt, and they're serious issues. I wouldn't want anybody to think I didn't think they were serious issues, but even without them, we were in trouble. And if all we worry about is the atmospherics and the lamentations, we're never going to solve the problem. What have I really been learning out of coming out of college in three or going into it coming out of it? It's the product that is failing. Quite literally speaking, the product is failing. And I really learned this about 6 years ago, or I started the learning. I've learned more. But 6 years ago, we were finishing off a book called The College Stress Test that actually Lotch in the industry read. And I have a team that helps me with it and the statistician on the team. We're at the very end of this. And she says, you know, Bob, I need to show you something that you didn't know about in the beginning. And what she was referencing is that everybody then was now talking about graduation rates. And she said to me, Bob, the issue is not graduation rate, it's retention for the first year. And I looked at her and I said, Susan, what in the world are you talking about? And she said, look at this. And what she had was a simple Excel spreadsheet she'd pulled out of iPads that showed a half of more of colleges and universities lost a quarter or more of their students in their freshman year. Mm. That's a wastage problem that's just unbelievable. So that we get them in, and what it means is that what we teach and how we teach it is increasingly unsatisfactory to those that we want to teach.
It's a pervasive problem because it indicates all the things you talked about, but there's financial detriment to that. There's a realistic capability of keeping doors open in schools. There's the expense of not completing and starting and having to start over or go differently.
It's just wasteful. There's a simple word for this. This is waste. This is genuine waste. One other observation, and then I'll let you pick me apart. So why, I asked myself. Mind you, I am a tenured faculty member at one of the better universities in America for 50 years. What do I know? I know that it is faculty that bear the responsibility for this, not as individuals so much, but collectively. And that what we teach is what we want, and we think that we're entitled to teach what we want. But the problem is that's not what the market is wanting. That's not what people are there for. It's all conflicted with what that general term, Gen Ed.
Yeah.
You really look at what Gen Ed is, it's what the faculty want to teach that students don't want to take. So that you look at these freshmen's curricula, the faculty need courses to teach. They want to be the courses they want to teach. The freshmen have to take them because they can't get out of there unless they pile up the credits. Nevertheless, what worked so well before, forced distribution, just isn't working anymore. And that what happens when one of our college in three decide to experiment with a three-year curriculum, they have to go back to ground zero, the really good ones, and they have to redesign the whole thing. And in watching them do the redesigning, I watch them take on fundamental issues and say, oops, that's not the way to do it. So what higher education needs is political peace on the one hand and a basic fundamental redesign on the other. And is it going to happen? I don't know. Our success with College in Three says we're not alone. But mind you, 80 institutions out of 1,800 is not exactly going to, we've got to get a whole lot more institutions involved.
Yeah.
So that's where I know it's a starting point.
Yeah, it's remarkable to hear it from your perspective with your experience in the industry, because I've heard it before in terms of from the student perspective, which is I had to take these classes that meant nothing to me. I was forced to take them. I didn't have an option. I was late to sign up day and the only class that wasn't filled was X, Y, and Z, and I had to do it. And it was name the subject matter that is of no interest or no sort of growth. But you put it a very specific way that I think we need to dig into, which is it's not what the market is requiring.
Mm.
When we deal with families and we help them through the admissions admissions process and we help them afford college, we talk about a successful launch, right? From out of college to, if it's grad school, great. If it's pre-law, pre-med, whatever it is, or if it's going right into the workforce, what the market requires is students that understand how to communicate and learn from the get-go in their job roles. Is that part of what we're missing?
What the kids want is they want to know how to do things. The students themselves don't talk about learning very much. People like you and I, and we talk about learning. They talk about doing. They want to do things. And studying ancient Mesopotamia doesn't actually lead to doing things. Turns out that if you're really interested in how thought comes about, that's a nice subject. But you got maybe 10 people in the class that want to do that, not the whole class. It's just put in your language when you talk to your parents. I know kids want to know how to do things. And I'll give you some more evidence of that. So these institutions that are experimenting in college in three, most of them, their three-year college programs are new programs, like cybersecurity or a whole set of things like that. That's where they're developing the freedom to take on what used to be sneered at as vocational. It's not vocational anymore, and it's certainly not worthy of sneering at.
A couple questions that have popped up through the discussion so far. One, I was curious about, with the research about the retention rates, and those numbers are shocking. And as you said, it's a failure, right? It's waste. Is there any research that you did to show what the main reasons are that students aren't returning for that sophomore year? I was just curious if your study showed anything on that end.
We actually didn't study that. We're studying it now. Have the deal with the institutions that join college in three is they become the subject of our research. So
yeah,
we're collecting two kinds of information. Only one out of our 80 have actually produced a three-year graduate, so it's a little early. We will monitor detailed retention. We won't ask students so much. Asking students is really tough on research.
Sure.
When you get some behavior, like we get how many students left or what is the pattern of that, we will have that. The other thing that we're doing is really actually trying to get the institutions then to focus on learning outcomes. There's a whole language about that. It's become faddish in a way, but it hasn't really paid off the way it should. And we have a senior colleague who seems to have a methodology for getting the institutions to understand whether they're producing learning outcomes. Over the next 3 years coming out of college in three is the basic profile of who does it. Do they succeed that? And we will have at the beginning of a pool of data on what are the learning outcomes. But what you want to know and what everybody wants to know is, if you do your degree in three, what are you missing? And that I can't answer that, but if you retain better, you're missing less. This is, we're either going to produce better retention or college in three is not the answer.
Yeah, the two kind of observations from hearing you guys talk, the first thing you were saying, Dave, like being forced to take classes. Obviously, some of the gen ed pieces is one thing, but now because the price of college has gone up so much over the years, you're also saying, wait a minute, I'm paying you and I can't do what I want here. Like I definitely see that can be a major problem. It's just as simple as I'm paying you $50,000 a year and you tell me I can't take the classes that I want. You're going to force me to do something else. Like, why am I paying you? That went right through my mind when you started putting that out, like tying the financial side together. So not necessarily a question, but just, again, there's obviously, I think, something that would need an overhaul or a change, because we see it and the numbers are showing it, that there has to be something that's...
Best way to think about it, we see four groups of institutions. One, we don't have any. Believe it or not, we do not have in College 3 any of the top 10 high-priced, highly selective institutions. They are awash in students, and they do things loose anyway. For all of their prestige, they just do it their way. All right. The next group, the most interesting group, are these state regional colleges. And that's a whole study in itself. I live in Pennsylvania, so we have the Pennsylvania group. Here's a whole exercise where they built all of the state colleges in farmlands because they wanted to please the legislature. That's all very nice, but there aren't any students coming out of agriculture into college. So you watch what's happening with the what are known as the PASHI schools in Pennsylvania. They've had a series of interesting leaders. They're really struggling. So it's everything that I've said, plus there's the local mess. And the ones who most often face a local mess are these state colleges. There are the really solid liberal arts colleges. And we love working with them because they have in their DNA now a sense of experimentation. So now I've given you three. I've given you the prestige. I've given you the state regional. I've given you the solid liberal arts. The sad ones are the struggling liberal arts.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, when a struggling liberal arts college comes to us and says, because we want to be part of this. We are discouraging, even though we're in the business of recruiting and selling, because what we know, we have 3 years of watching now, it takes real money to get this started. We can demonstrate over 6-7 years, you get all the money back. But like lots of investment things, you better start with some real money to begin with. And they don't have any real money to play with.
I've had conversations with others in the industry on the, we're in Pennsylvania as well. So we're, the Cabrini situation was a very interesting, just straight up got to shut its doors, got to sell off its assets and move along. Doesn't exist anymore. My sort of expectation is there's going to be a consolidation, especially with declining enrollments, declining retention. That means a declining bottom line for these institutions. And as you said, if they don't have the funds, are they really going to be able to exist? Or are they going to be able, are they going to be able to afford the modification and the revolution necessary to be relevant?
This is about fundamental experimentation. And this is getting faculty to do things that they haven't been doing. But look at what the dilemma here is. You've got a faculty group that up until maybe 7 years ago thought, this is pretty good. I've got friends in business who make more money than me, but this is pretty good. For these faculty in these struggling liberal arts colleges, nothing's very good anymore. And what do you do then? And how do you turn it around? And you don't want just this to be a world of state colleges, because there aren't enough of them actually, nor do you want it to be a world just of the high prestige, because they're going to charge too much money. So we need actually a, and I'll use your word now, we need a revolution that takes hold in these really struggling liberal arts colleges. Part of what you read, I read every week, two liberal arts colleges worrying about trying, sometimes they didn't even call them mergers, they just call them combining, but they're really trying to put it together. And now we come back to where I start from. It would be better if the world wasn't, if we weren't being victimized. I wouldn't want anybody to think that I don't understand that the moment in this political climate, higher education really is being victimized. And that makes what I want to have happen all the less likely to happen.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy from how you've put it. We've gotten off the rails of what the original intent was, right? You were talking about your, back in your day, you had a mentor that helped you get to the next level and get into the right spot. It's increasingly more difficult to do that at any level anymore.
Then the other kind of thing is graduate school is becoming also more remote for people. The probability that the Bob Semsky just starting college today, ending up in graduate school, is really a lot less. I told my father, dropped me off at for my freshman year. And he says, what's next, Bob? And I said, graduate school. And I never doubted it for a moment.
Yeah.
That's also gone. All of these sort of, it's in process, it's moving along the right way to go. You're dealing with a world, I'm dealing with a world where nothing seems exactly right anymore.
And then you add the business end of it together and the sort of competitive environment that has been created. And it, again, it's coming to a head. The question, is it going to come to a head and solve the problem, or is it going to exacerbate the problem?
Lots of people are saying, well, just get rid of the college years. We don't need them anymore. Also not a wonderful idea. What I worry about are the people who are genuine kids, 17 years old, who have a lot more experience with drugs than almost anything else. And they don't have long work histories. They're pretty good with the communication skills, but it's only amongst their own set. They become remote, less and less able to communicate with somebody like me.
Let me ask you a pointed question on, you place the blame on the faculty itself.
Responsibility is a better word.
Responsibility. It is a better word. You're right. You put the responsibility on. How much of this problem has been generated by the ego? That idea that this is a subject I'm passionate about, so you will learn about it. That ego of that professor, that faculty to allow or to force people to take classes that are of no interest to their pursuit.
Now I'll really get into trouble. It's about the liberal arts, all right? So that's where what you're talking about is more likely to raise its head. Business professors have super egos and they just assume they know how to make money and they've chosen to be in college instead. I have a lot of friends who are business professors, but that it's the liberal arts that are lost. And it's not all the liberal arts. We consider psychology a liberal arts. That's actually a I want to know how to do it thing. Foreign language, however, I'm not sure. You guys may know better than I do, but I have the impression foreign language instruction has fallen off too. Is that your impression?
My kids all are in foreign language classes. It does not seem very intense. It is not what I remember studying the vocabulary. In my experience, they don't approach foreign language the way they approach English. And when I was in school, we approached it like it was, you were learning the grammatical properness of the next language. These applications like Babbel and things like that, that try and teach the conversational language as opposed to the root of the language, right? I had to take Latin, I had to take French, I had to take multiple languages.
I have 8 grandchildren. 4 of them are Europeans. That is, my eldest has lived in Europe ever since he got out of graduate school. They're French educated. They grew up in the French system. They know is how to speak these languages. One of my granddaughters right now, she's in Spain. And one of the things that she gets out of Spain is she's going to speak Spanish. My family Zooms together. This highly dispersed family, we are together every Sunday on Zoom. And we were asking how she was doing. This is a mainline Cambridge first, all of that. And I was just fascinated. Her test of her Spanish was, the bus driver understood me. She's living in Spain, and if the bus driver doesn't understand her, she's got real trouble. That's what I mean by foreign language. I spoke Danish when I lived in Denmark. I don't anymore. I worked in a hotel. I was the desk manager in a hotel in the summers in Denmark. We would always laugh about my Danish, but nevertheless, it was the ability to communicate, to actually master the language, not the way that you were describing a language as an art form. What's the faculty view? The student view is, can I make the bus driver understand me? I'm less sure of that as an observation. I was just struck when my granddaughter started this conversation, because that's what she meant. She knew it was, does the bus driver understand me?
We've talked extensively about liberal arts education. And first of all, because of the political environment, everybody hears the word liberal and think it has something to do with politics. It does not. I went to Franklin and Marshall. It's a great liberal arts college. And I tell everybody, the thing that I took away from F&M was my ability to learn, period. And it's funny because I had a conversation with my son yesterday coming home from football practice. We were talking about a science class and he goes, Dad, it's so boring. The teacher just stands there and talks. And I had an aha moment. I said, Gavin, do you realize that as an adult now, I pay large sums of money to attend conferences where people lecture me on what they know? Like, I now pay money to go hear that. And I said, and you're getting it for free. And all you can think is how boring it is, right? And so the liberal arts education, from my perspective, it taught me how to learn in all facets. It made me a great student of all things, and it still persists to this day.
You want the crisis that's really just on the, this is the AI crisis. What did I really get out of my liberal arts college and 4 years at Yale? I am a pretty good writer. I have something like 12 books. I've done all of that. People like to talk to me because I'm reasonably humorous when I want to be. That's what I got. And I'm not sure that my grandchildren, other than the French ones, are getting that.
Yep.
This idea of it's really being conversational in a language. Mm-hmm. Not understanding the language, but having this idea set that you can be conversational in it. And that, all of that is at risk right now.
Yeah.
I wanted to get back to the schools that are doing the 3-year program, because it, I guess from the business aspect, Dave, you mentioned the competitive nature of schools. And
yeah.
I forget exactly when the big merit shift happened a few years ago, that like the first school came in and said, if we raise our tuition price, but offer everybody a big merit scholarship, their application rate went through the roof, their enrollment rate went through the roof. And a lot of schools followed suit because it was something that worked. I have not heard about this 3-year bachelor's until I saw that we were interviewing you today. And immediately I said, I know a lot of kids that would want to be interested in that. Well, if it's able to attract kids away from another 4-year school that you can get the degree in 3, I can see schools following suit. But I'm curious, is there anything that's published that families can go and find what schools actually offer this program right now?
We have a website called collegein3.org, and it does have a list of institutions that are doing it on it.
Is it specific majors or coursework that each of these schools are doing, or are they doing it across a broad brushstroke of majors?
I have only one institution out of my 80 who decided instantly to change the whole curriculum. Everybody else says, we will start a degree in 3 program. So that's what most of them are doing. And it's smart because it does 2 things. You only have to deal with 5 faculty members instead of the whole faculty who will want to say, you don't have any right to do that. And 2 is that you have room for experimentation, because we will let a small group try all kinds of crazy things. You will not let the whole college college try something crazy at the word go.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I know now better than I knew before is you want the experimentation to be granular, not all-encompassing, because that's not going to work.
When you go and you pitch this, right? I'm just talking about the pitch man side of this thing. What is the first reaction of a college? Do they realize it's broken and they're looking for this change, or is it a substantial amount of encouragement, for lack of a better expression?
I have to explain something to you, so then you'll understand why I can't answer the question.
Okay.
One of my experiments at Penn 20 years ago, we started at Penn in the Graduate School of Education something called the Executive Doctorate Program. So we produce people with PhDs in a different way. It almost, though I at the time it was not the model for all of this, but I can at least say I've done this. We've done the Executive Doctorate. So when I came time to make my pitches, guess who I pitched to? My former students in Executive Doctorate. And they knew me. They knew me. That was never a battle I faced, because they knew damn well talking to me, I wasn't going to put up with let's do it the same old way. They had watched me over all their years. In fact, the Executive Doctorate itself was a product of somebody that said, there's got to be a better way of doing this. I assume that works outside of that, but you were asking me my pitch experience. I only pitch the people who I think are ready to hear the message. No salesperson tells you that, but I will tell you that's my experience. And I have enough former students out there that I haven't exhausted that supply yet.
You know what the best part of that whole thing is? That you summarize the best sales in the easiest way, which is pitch to people where you know they're going to say yes. I'm going to change my whole metric here. I got it now. That's it. Find the people that say yes. So you're well published in a variety of different areas. If you were giving advice in your experience and wisdom to a prospective high school family approaching college, overwhelmed by the information that is out there, overwhelmed by the intensity of the sort of new student marketing, how would you approach the college game for a family? Or what advice do you have for that?
All right. Remember my story, so I'm consistent. I sell this because I sell to people I know.
Yeah. Yep.
It's about connections. So that if I'm advising somebody, I say, find somebody, I'll make F&M the thing, find somebody that you know that's been to F&M. So use your connections to ask the questions. Don't just read the U.S. News and World Report, whatever it is. You've got to make it on the personal level. Find somebody that's walked this path and ask the hard questions of them. To me, that's the answer, but it's hard. So a kid in high school in the middle of Pennsylvania wants to know what it's like to study at USC in California. All he knows about USC in California is it's on the news all the time. What are the probability he really knows somebody that went to USC? But this is a world of connections. Over and over, I say that to people. It's connections.
Yeah, I remember vividly 2001 in March, I drove to Lancaster by myself. I was tasked. My father said, go to campus, find people, talk to them, determine if it's a school for you. And I went, I got into the Steger Business Center, went to the third floor, was poking around. I came to this back corner office, and Professor Sean Flaherty was the chair of the economics department, sitting in his office, and I knocked on the door jamb, and I said, hey, I'm a prospective student, could I talk to you? He talked to me for a half hour just on F&M and what he does and how being a chair is. And so to me, it's like that was a selling point. I was not even a student at the school, and I could go talk to a professor, right? So the reason I say that is because it's not just, in my opinion, find the people. I think the people will give you perspective, right? And I think as many perspectives as you can get from people that are in the know is what is extraordinarily valuable, because I had friends that went there. I had people that I knew that went there, and they all gave it the sort of, hey, it's a good school. It's hard, but it's good. And then being able to talk to a professor while I was on campus as just a random citizen, it really moved the needle for me.
I'll give you a different kind of story. I'll give you my story.
Sure.
How did I get from Berkeley to Whittier College? You have to know my mother. My mother was fond of Quakers. She wasn't a Quaker herself, but somewhere in her mindset, Quakers should rule the world. But that's how I got there. But again, it was connection. And my mother had friends who were Quakers who would talk to me. There is a randomness to this. I don't envy you guys your job. You deal with a randomness in a way that me with my numbers doesn't have to deal with. But I always remember my story. My story is random. How did I end up at Yale? Did I know anything about Yale? No, but John told me I should go to Yale and then arranged so I could go to Yale.
It's like the 6 degrees of separation. Yeah. And you're connecting dots in random but extraordinary ways at the same time, right? It's using what is familiar in an effort to make a sound decision on yourself. And we talk about it a lot in the professional world, right? Networking is everything. Who you meet, who you hobnob with, who you go and try and make available on your schedule. And the people you meet are the ones that typically can, somewhere or another, you're connected through that sort of networking energy.
Yeah.
Great stuff. I think this has been phenomenal. It's great insight. I appreciate your time on the show.
I honestly hope that this change does happen, because I think, as you put it, even beyond all the noise that's out there, we're overlooking potential, really the heart of the problem. And I think addressing that, and hopefully it takes, because it's, in my world, it's one of the biggest complaints that you hear is this: I'm taking courses, I'm paying money for something that I don't want to learn, I don't want to do. And if we can get back to kids enjoying their education, I think we can start getting with some of those outcomes. So I wish you the best.
All right. You guys made it pleasurable. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This was great. I highly enjoyed the conversation, and it was everything I hoped for and more.
All right, everyone. It's been Knowledge with Dr. Robert Zemsky.
Thanks for listening to the College Knowledge Podcast with your hosts, Dave Kozak and Joe Kearns. We hope you enjoyed this week's exploration of higher education, sponsored by the College Planning Network and Paradigm Financial Group. That's all for this episode. See you next time.